It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis and Matthew Ingram are here for our last show of 2018, and there is a lot to talk about, including Google changelog that is full of holiday cheer and Macaulay Culkin. We also will talk about new Easter eggs in your Tesla and my new theory about the AI revolution. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 487. Recorded Wednesday, December 19th, 2018. You're filling it wrong. This Week in Google is brought to you by Brex, the first corporate credit card for startups. Get the card free, and Twit listeners get Brex card fees waived in perpetuity at brex.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. And by Grammarly. Grammarly is a communication tool that helps people improve their writing to be mistake-free, clear, and effective. Start writing confidently by going to grammarly.com/twig to get 20% off a Grammarly premium account today. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, a show where we cover the latest word from the Googleverse. Stacy is taking the day off. It is the last show of 2018. Jeff Jarvis is a workhorse. He is here. Professor of Journalism
Festival.
At CUNY.
I got festive lights here.
It's festive us for the rest of us.
Nice.
That's
you
Matthew
see my festive
Ingram.
Lights?
Yes, very festive. December 23rd is officially Festivus. But Matthew, just because I know you're a pagan. Oh, I'm sorry, you're a Canadian. Close. We put up the Festivus poll.
Fantastic.
Feats of strength and the airing of grievances coming soon.
Yes. Let's get to it.
Actually, the actual
Canadians
Festivus,
have no grievances.
No, I know. What are you unhappy about? Soft wood?
We're sorry. We just keep it to ourselves.
They're sorry they have no grievances.
I'm so sorry. No, that's actually Matthew might have a little grievance. He, of course, writes for the Columbia Journalism Review, where he is their man about the digital universe, and had an article this week in CJR. NPR's move into podcasting analytics raises privacy concerns.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I imagine you probably have some thoughts about that.
I certainly do. So what is NPR planning? What are they up to?
So they've rolled it out. It's an open standard that they developed that they're hoping, obviously, lots of distributors and creators will integrate.
And they own this actually explains why they bought for us is the number two podcast platform,
Pocket Casts. Yeah. So the interesting thing is Pocket Casts has said it has no plans to implement this standard.
They obviously didn't get the memo yet.
They did. They're worded not it do very it? Carefully. It doesn't sound like they're going to do it.
Wow, good for them.
So
that,
which
by
I
the way,
was interesting.
Kills this in its tracks.
It doesn't. It sure doesn't help. That's for sure.
And so how does it work?
It's basically tags.
Audio
the content is
audio tags, or
yeah, the content is tagged. I wouldn't pretend to understand how it actually works technologically, but the way it's described is that there are tags in the stream, and you can tag whatever you want. You can tag the ads. You can tag the beginning of the podcast. You can tag when the guests all introduce themselves. You can tag a specific feature within your podcast, and then you can see how many people make it to that tag. You can
how does it report people. Back up the playing of the tag?
So magic, I assume.
No, well, that's why it matters whether Pocket Casts implements it. It does it. The player has to be listening for the tag and then upload it.
Right.
So if iTunes doesn't implement it, Pocket Cast doesn't implement it, it's dead in the water, because those are the two, number one and number two podcast platforms.
And as a business, what do you think of it, Leo?
Yeah.
This is, well, to me, okay, so the way NPR is pitching this, according to your article, is as a useful thing for programmers because they can know when people tune out of their show. That's not the reason for it. It's, and it's really a bad, it's surprising, it's shocking that a content company would do this because it's really for advertisers. This is what advertisers would like. You know, they're so frustrating. And some of this comes from the fact that the same people who buy podcast ads buy digital banner ads. And so they're really used to this kind of instant metrics and feedback. How many people looked, how many people clicked, how many people clicked through, how many people bought. They get all these metrics. And it really bugs them that podcasts don't offer those same kind of metrics. I should point out that neither does a Super Bowl ad. Nor, I mean, you've got ratings, but we have ratings for podcasts that are very comparable. In fact, I think better than television and radio ratings. But you don't know if the person got up during the Super Bowl ad and went to the bathroom. You don't in magazines, Jeff, you know this, having been in the magazine business for years, magazines can't determine whether an ad was seen or not.
So it's extreme bullshit. BS. Sorry, I'm just going to cut that out.
But well, and even in the circulation ad, what is it, ABC, the Advertising Circulation Bureau, even has a pass-along rate to inflate the numbers.
That's the Simmons, that's syndicated research. So when I was at
which everybody knows it's a lie.
It's also a lie.
People had a pass-along rate of 8 readers per copy. Every copy was dog-eared as could be.
Yeah.
Right. Ow. Because it was public place. Also, they counted people who would riffle through the magazine at checkout. And if you passed a quiz, then they counted that reader. So 8 readers per copy versus about 2, I think, for TV Guide at the time.
So the advertisers really want to know who saw the ad, how many people saw the ad, who clicked on the ad. They really want that. They, unfortunately, every medium in the world is competing against the two giants, Google and Facebook. And if you can't offer the customer information that Google and Facebook offer and the click-through rate information that they offer, you're a second tier. So NPR said, well, we can do this. But what it doesn't consider is, A, everybody has to use a player that supports it. B, and you talk about this, Matthew, there are privacy concerns in this.
Yeah, that was what Marco Arment mentioned. He developed Overcast and also Tumblr.
Another huge, Marco's Overcast is like the number 3 podcast platform.
Massive. And so I noticed when he said, I have no intention of implementing this and I hope no one else does either. And that interested me because I wondered why he was so vocal about it. Especially since NPR was pitching it as a good thing. And he said that even though NPR says that it's, it maintains user privacy. He said someone is going to use this to target users because they've got an IP address when they download the podcast. You can do all kinds of data extraction based on IP address, and then you can tag that to how far they listen in a podcast, and you can effectively, come up with a profile on people. And he thought that would be an actively bad thing for the podcasting business.
Is that any worse than just a web page?
Everybody listening to this needs to understand that advertising supported media is under constant pressure from advertisers to deliver more information about you to the advertisers. That's the game that's going on, period. And every single content creator is fighting back, partly because to protect privacy, but also partly in our own interest. I don't want people to start counting whether somebody listened to this show or not. In my opinion, the only thing an advertiser should ever be interested in is, did your ad work? Did you sell more in widgets? If you sold more widgets than the ad cost, then you're ahead. Why isn't that good enough? But they all want more. They all want to know, what age group, blah, blah, blah.
Haven't iTunes and Spotify already implemented analytics?
But only, again, if you use iTunes to listen. Most people, even most people who get their podcasts from iTunes, don't use iTunes to listen.
Okay.
Spotify.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, no. Well, they download it on their phone. They might listen on their phone. Right. Maybe Apple's podcast app does that, but most other apps don't. Marco's doesn't. Pocket Cast doesn't. The iTunes stats are exactly that. They're iTunes specific for people who listen on iTunes. I guess
because I will say
project from that, right?
NPR, when I talked, I spoke with them, someone who developed the standard and their sort of VP of digital strategy, they very much focused on how useful this information was to creators. They said that NPR had effectively used a similar technology and it had changed the way they did their politics podcast because they noticed that people were bailing in the early parts of the podcast when everyone introduces themselves. And so they went back and rejigged the podcast so that they got to the material faster. And they described this as a win for that type of analytics.
Okay. If they just be honest and say, we're NPR, we have sponsors.
They still pretend they're non-commercial, for crying out loud. They have more commercials than we do.
Yeah.
So it's a lie. It's advertising driven. There may be some value to programmers. I'm not champing at the bit to get that kind of information. And by the way, I know our audience doesn't want us to spy on them any more than they are.
There were definitely a bunch of people who responded to Marco on Twitter saying thank you.
Yes.
You know, for sort of upholding our right to not be tracked and
AdTech,
not to go the way the web has.
There's no one in the world who thinks ad tech was a good thing for the web.
Well,
or for people
except
in general.
That in the long run, if it increases the value of media properties, it supports journalism. That's a good thing.
But will it?
And we can debate long and hard about whether advertisers should get this. But you're only going to compete. You're competing with data that does exist for TV, that does exist for.
That's true.
Magazines. That data doesn't. That kind of data exists for TV in a very limited fashion using people meters, which measures a small, tiny audience and then extrapolates to the
larger
audience.
Along comes every platform that exists in the web, and the web promised greater ad accountability.
Advertisers want it, but I don't know if it makes their ads better or more effective.
So there's two ways you could look at it, and this was a discussion I had with Marco. You could argue that if you offer these analytics, maybe advertisers will be willing to pay you more. But you could also argue that the finer you slice and dice the attention in your podcast, you might end up with the same kind of nickel and dime garbage ads that we get on the web and actually wind up with less.
I think it's potentially the opposite. Podcasts now, yes and no, right? The power of a podcast of an ad on this network is that Leo reads it. Leo believes in it. It's hard to fast forward through it. There's high recall. Right?
Yeah.
It's native.
They work.
That's the value.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It works. And as long as you have that kind of advertising, then that has added extra value. The issue is if you're serving commercials pre-made into an audio format, into a podcast, then you're competing with radio and other
things. That's a good point. And there we've tried, and with very poor success, we've tried insertion ads in some of
PAI.
I like to think of it as man in the middle ads, but in some of our long tail shows and shows that we can't sell and so forth.
We
made a few $100s. And the real problem for us and the reason we stopped doing it is we couldn't guarantee that the inserted ads weren't competing with the good ads that we put in, and we don't want to lose our real advertisers for a few $100 in insertion ads. So you're right, though, for that kind of inventory, I guess it's fine. I'm an old fart. I don't want to see podcasting become massively commercialized, but it has to, I suppose. I'm saddened to see NPR, non-commercial public radio, be the one leading the charge on this, but doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, WNYC is just as much a podcast, commercial podcast entity as anything out there. They're a juggernaut.
I did notice a bunch of people were sort of said that they thought they saw podcasts in a way as a kind of, a haven of content where they weren't, where their every sort of step and breath and click was not tracked.
Jeff, did these kind of debates go on with blogging? Like did bloggers say, don't man.
No. Remember Henry Copeland had blog ads?
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a paid content debate. I remember that.
Well, that goes on, right? The fake
sponsored ads.
Fake content that really is just an ad. Yeah. We get that email every single day. I get four or five people saying they'd like to write for our website.
I saw something fascinating just while we're talking about this. There was a story about, I'm trying to remember where, I think it was in the Atlantic, and it was about would-be influencers on Instagram, so mostly young kids.
Oh, yeah, the Atlantic had a story about people pretending they had ads.
So they make a post that looks as much like an ad as possible, so it looks like they have ads, and therefore they're an influencer. I just found that fascinating.
But you know what? When we started Entertainment Weekly, and we did the mock-up, which I have around here somewhere. I have it right there. Hold on. I'll show you something.
Because Jeff goes back to the early days of
Before the war.
Before the war. He started Entertainment Weekly, so he's got the mock-up here of EW.
I've got the mock-up. Right. And
you keep it handy just in case.
No, I have it because I teach it in school. So in the mock-up, we put ads.
Yeah, of course.
Right? You know, we're going to put ads. And everything we put out there, we put ads. They were not really ads. And the first, first issues of things, you'd offer advertisers space for free because it would look bad not to have ads.
Yeah. Heavy sigh.
Kiss Cosby goodbye cover.
I don't know if there's a whole lot of privacy you're giving up. So these tags, in theory, would not identify you. I mean, no. They could. It is conceivable that they could, but they, as designed, don't identify you. They just, as a podcaster, you would get the information that...
Aggregated data,
100 people tuned out here, 200 people tuned out here.
And whatever privacy is through your IP address.
Yeah, and it's not like, not more than you would on the web. And the real value of it is that the advertiser then, and this is the thing that really scares me, the advertiser would say, oh, yeah, so we're not going to pay for the people who didn't get to our ad.
Right.
We're only going to pay for the people who got to our ad. That's what advertisers want.
Visibility. Yeah.
So the other thing that someone mentioned, which I thought was interesting, was if you tag the ads, that's going to make it a lot easier to skip them because you could just have your software
don't tag
run to a tag and jump to the next tag.
That's easy to fix. You just tag before the ad, 2 minutes before the ad. I mean, that's not so hard. It's 5 minutes after the ad. It's not so hard. It's interesting. I think it's a non-starter, just like iTunes is kind of a non-starter, unless they can offer, just as Nielsen does, a sample. Well, we know 5,000 people listen to this podcast and this percentage tuned out. And I guess that would be valuable. It's sad to me. I can't wait to get out of the podcast business because essentially it's being eaten alive by this kind of crap.
But it did feel like
what you're going to get is a bunch of big media companies making podcasts. They're just going to turn it right into broadcast television and radio. And
which is sad.
That's sad because that's not what I want to do. That's the reason I'm in podcasting. As a refugee from commercial television and radio.
Now I'm getting depressed.
Well, it always happens, right? As soon as this is what's happening. We see it here all the time. Yeah. We don't get the ad buys we used to because they want to buy. I was listening to Conan O'Brien's podcast, which is fine. He like every other comic. They all comedian podcasts are essentially the same.
Yeah.
And he does the ads and he riffs his way through the ads. They're funny. Ha ha ha. There's no direct response. I'm sure Conan has said, well, no, we're not going to do a direct response. You're buying Conan. That's good enough for you. Direct response is what we do, / twit or use the offer code twig. And that's a very primitive way advertisers can see what kind of response they're getting to an ad. Conan is saying, no, you don't need that. You're buying Conan. That's all you need to know.
So he's going the other way. He's going
rightly
further
so.
Away
he
from
can.
Measurement. Yeah.
And it's just it's the death of anything that's not Conan on podcasting. That's why.
When you had Ford, there was no direct response involved. It was a branding.
Yeah. I like branding ads. I wish we could get them. Wish we could get more of those. Those are good.
Mm-hmm.
We do some. But
And I would argue in your case, because you get early in on, you helped brand a lot of these direct response companies too.
Well, yeah. And most, honestly, Most podcast advertising directly copies our model. I mean, we kind of pioneered the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
But that's fine. I mean, it's just, I think, I don't know. I'm getting to be an old man. I actually have a new theory, which I'm going to spring on you guys. I don't know if I
go
should
for it.
Tell everybody.
But do it.
I've been reading, and I highly recommend it, Yuval Noah Harari's new book. If you read Homo Deus and his previous book, Sapiens, he's a Israeli professor of philosophy, a deep thinker. He's loved in Silicon Valley, which is interesting because he's not a huge fan of Silicon Valley. His newest is 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. And admittedly, I haven't got to the end of it yet, but he makes a very strong case at the beginning for just humans are terrible at deciding things like driving cars, right? We know that. 1.25 million people die every year in car accidents. If you had autonomous, you know, if you said it's illegal for humans to drive, let the computers drive, that number would shrink to maybe 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, would shrink by an order of magnitude, at least probably 100 times less. If as AIs get better at diagnosing illness, they're not there yet, admittedly, why would you let a human with all our human foibles and failings diagnose your illness if an AI could do it? And then he goes on to say, and honestly, really, music should be tailored to your emotional reactions. As soon as we can get, you know, a headband that gives you fMRI-capable readings, might as well have the music tailored to what you're in the mood for. And it will suit perfectly.
I just happened to see at this moment a Facebook ad for Mindset. Headset that reads your brain activity.
Yeah, and I look at this. This is years and years and years off, but
I can't wait to see where this goes.
If humans can't be trusted to set election districts, let the machines do it to avoid gerrymandering. What the humans do is they set goals, as in with health. You know, what's the best health outcome? Maybe, I don't know, maybe because what's the best health outcome per dollar? You could probably throw that in. With driving, what's the fewest number of fatalities? Humans can set the goals for gerrymandering or not gerrymandering. You know, what's the most representative way to set up our congressional districts? Ultimately, follow me down this road, as AIs get better, humans should probably set the goals, but they can't be trusted to really implement. Just like self-driving cars, we can set a goal. We want fewest traffic fatalities and let the self-driving cars do it.
Which is how all of this auditing of platforms and stuff should be looked at. You don't see the algorithm, see the outcome.
Yeah. So, yes, exactly. So we got to be careful. And look, we're at early days, so you can pull up many ways it doesn't work yet, including in self-driving vehicles. But if you could get AI to really work, first of all, how would you implement such a thing? How would you? Because I'm saying let go and let Google. Let the AI do it. Now, okay, but was it Google you trust? Or who do you? What human set the goals? Who do you trust? What's the mechanism for setting the goals? But let's assume we could solve that. And maybe we can't, but it's got to be better than what we got. Why isn't our next government going to be based on technology and AI? Humans shouldn't be allowed to vote. We don't
more
vote.
Panic
we
will don't, stop it.
I agree on that. But we don't vote with our brains. We vote with our hearts. Everybody knows that.
But sometimes that's good.
When?
Well, sometimes. I can't think of an example. I can think of bad examples.
I can think of a lot of bad examples. I mean, really, honestly, Brexit is a bad example.
Yeah. For me, the problem is that artificial intelligence and algorithms are just expressions of humanity. I mean, the way you design
precisely an algorithm, that's exactly
is a bunch
right.
of people encode their biases into software.
So here's what I submit. When we talk about AI, we often think about the wrong hazard. We think about machines that are going to take over, right? The Terminator scenario. That's not actually what's going to happen. These AIs aren't going to be human. They're just going to be very fast, smart calculating machines. They're going to be like AlphaZero that taught itself to be the best chess player, Go player, and Shogi player in the world, beating everybody, humans and machines. And it taught itself without any examples, only knowing the rules. So it was told, here's what you need to solve. And it did it in 4 hours.
Yep.
Now, I know we're at the early days, but assume that that progress continues in 10, 50, 100 years. We can say, look, this is what humans should do. We should set our goals. We should say what it means to win a chess game or what it means to drive safely. But then we should leave implementation to AIs. And then I think you're exactly right, Matthew. The questions we should now be asking are not, how do we keep the machines from killing us? Oh, my God, it's the Terminator. What we should be asking is, how do you do that? How do you determine what the goals are?
Right.
How do you implement
that?
How do you train a machine?
Sometimes machines will know better.
How to train a machine without infecting it with our own biases?
And I would argue that very quickly, once you get beyond things like, say, driving or playing chess, once you get into sort of messy human problems, like who should get health care, who should get... Once you get into problems like that, coming up with the goals and how you implement them is actually way harder than sort of incorporating those goals into software.
Maybe, yeah. But I mean, I think we could come up with an algorithm for who should get healthcare.
Where does this go for their podcast business, Leo?
The podcasts are gone.
I thought this was all going to give you a new business.
I was trying to bring this back to podcasting.
No, I'm done with podcasting.
That algorithms will do the
this
podcasting.
This is down the road. Algorithms.
Oh, okay.
I won't look it. First of all, we're going to have a big problem because 90% of us won't have jobs anyway.
But you'll still be alive. You'll be like a head in a jar or something like that.
I mean, honestly, I think podcasts could be created. I mean, if AIs get to that stage, podcasts could be created by AIs just as much as a hit song could be created by an AI.
They're writing news stories.
Yeah.
You know, there's robots writing news.
And it may still be me hosting because God knows we have hundreds of thousands of hours of me that could easily be used to create an AI if people wanted that.
No brainer. Yeah.
They probably want something more attractive, but.
Or they would use your sort of avatar and they would use deep fake video faking technology and someone else would read the words.
Yeah, exactly.
But it would look like you.
No, and an AI would generate the content.
We'd probably do that today.
We're actually fairly close to that, right? Yeah. Deep fakes is a good example.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see the, I think it was NVIDIA actually came out with a whole bunch of photos of faces and... Mm-hmm. I think cars, and there was another category, and they were all generated by AI. So none of them
faces
were real.
Most freak people, but they were right here. But the thing is, they were
they're composites.
So they were argued fake. They were still combinations of features. They were inspired by faces.
Right.
There was a starting
point. None of those faces actually exist in the world, and yet they're totally 100% believable.
And the point being that we aren't at that turning point, that inflection point yet, but it's coming, and it's coming fast. And you look at this, and we've come a long way in a very short period of time. Those are not real people, but you'd never know those are not real people.
My fear is if you have, say, the healthcare algorithm that determines who gets healthcare, then people will kind of absolve themselves of any need to think about it because they'll say, well, the algorithm decides who lives and who dies. The algorithm decides who gets sick
cars,
and who gets medicine.
That's being discussed with cars, right?
As it should be. Humans are terrible drivers. And
it's
the
classic.
Also, if given a choice of killing the 5-year-old or the 80-year-old,
because
it knows
problem.
Enough to be able to make that choice.
Yeah,
well,
but
you
I think that I think the trolley problem is a little bit of a MacGuffin. Or a red herring.
A little bit.
Because really, a million and a quarter people die every year in auto accidents. What all you have to do is tell the AI drive as best you possibly can to maximize human life and minimize damage destruction.
But human life
and people will die
in the car.
You know what? Whatever, of all kinds.
Life of the person in the car?
In the car and out of the car and property destruction. And you can easily think of a set of rules that you would follow.
The 3 laws of robotics.
Not those. Those are made up. But seriously, you could come up with a couple of real rules. And yes, people would still die. And there would still be pedestrians run over and there'd be accidents.
People will still die, for sure.
But not one and a quarter million people.
Yeah.
Right. But you know what's going to happen. I mean, we already had that first case in Phoenix where the woman died, but she was apparently homeless and perhaps But
the car doesn't need to know that. The car, that's not in the algorithm.
No, what I'm saying is people didn't have a complete psycho fit about that. But what's going to happen is one of these cars is going to kill somebody.
Yeah.
And and we're going to have a full moral panic. And the argument that, well, but it killed, one-tenth the number that the physical drivers killed won't go anywhere. People will be in a dither.
Elon keeps mentioning that whenever someone brings up, that it's not safe. He keeps pointing out that the things that we drive every day are also not even close to being safe. And yet, they're 100 times more unsafe. And yet we're perfectly happy to keep driving them around.
I bet you that the Mark Zuckerberg and the Zergs and the Larry Pages of the world, in the back of their minds, are having this exact thought. That really, why are we letting humans run anything? Let's come up with some basic, goals, some tenets, some values, let the AI do it.
But that's why it's so important that it's not just people like Mark Zuckerberg who can make these decisions or incorporate their biases into the algorithms.
That's where we should be thinking. Exactly right.
There's got to be a lot more diversity, not just of, skin color, but economic background and world experience. And you've got to have, you can't just have this tiny, tiny subsection of rich
kids.
We're
worried about killer robots. We should instead be worried about how do you design the tenets, the values? What are our values?
Yeah,
and how do you build that into a machine? And I don't think, AlphaZero didn't do machine learning, really. It was told what the goals of the game were and left on its own devices to play millions and millions of games against itself to figure out what the best strategies were. That's probably the right way to do it.
So I put in the rundown that Google has put out previously put out its policies for AI. Now it's put out its procedure for how it's going to review those policies. So it's like a hospital.
That's what I'm saying is I think they've already gone down this road and they're thinking about this. One of the reasons I think Harari is so lionized in Silicon Valley, invited to dinners, and there was a big article in the New York Times about him a couple of weeks ago, and about they were puzzled, like, this guy is telling us that the big tech companies are a problem and that there's going to be a useless class of people, a large group of people who can't work, who have no value to the machines. And why is Silicon Valley lionizing him? Because he's taking them down that path, and they're already thinking about these kinds of things. And they're thinking about, I think, the right problem, which is how do you choose what you're going to optimize for? And then let the machines do the optimization.
But when does the choice become, when do we make bad choices and the machine can make a better choice for us?
In every respect, almost.
Right.
Right. So Harari uses an example, choosing what your career is going to be. This is something you deal with every day, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
People use all sorts of incorrect, theories about life, and we're terrible at choosing our career.
And about themselves.
I'm going to be a lawyer because I love thinking about deep philosophical stuff. And then they find out it has nothing to do with that.
But that's where a lot of the magic of life comes from.
Serendipity.
Too.
That's the serendipity argument, right?
And you also get people who, you get incredibly tortured people who did all the wrong things who become incredible artists because they find something in that. Every single person who does that, obviously, but that
say that the oyster needs a kernel of sand to make a pearl.
Yeah, and if some computer said here's what you should do instead, we would have lost that person and all the things that they created out of frustration.
You're making an argument for suffering. You understand that, Matthew?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay. I don't know. I think that I have this idea. It's just a kernel of an idea, but I'm gonna pursue this. This may be my new and final, because once
manifesto,
my last, Leo's last testament
from your cabin, in the woods.
Yeah, I'm gonna make a bumper sticker. Let go and let the AI do it.
I think you're right, though, that the sort of coming up with how we decide on the goals and how we incorporate those is way more important than, worrying about, whether software is going to kill us or whether Terminator is going to.
Right.
It's actually more scary because it's going to be so hard to do. Yeah. You know, it's going to make self-driving cars look like a day at the beach.
Yeah. We already have evidence that there are a lot of human endeavors computers do a better job with. Maybe not all. Our show today brought to you by Brex, the best credit card for business. We started using our Brex cards. They're very nice, by the way. You can see them in the lower third. They're nice kind of black and gray cards. Very stylish. But that's not the reason you get a Brex card. You get a Brex card because it's perfect for startups, small businesses, a business like yours. A five-minute online application, very easy. Underwriting is based on cash raised by your business, the cash in your bank account. And for that reason, Brex can offer your company 10 to 20 time higher limits than other corporate credit cards. And here's a great one. No personal liability required. Brex offers high-value rewards, too, that are tailored around modern businesses. Double the points on software. Triple the points on restaurants and travel. Seven times septuple the points on rideshare. And I love this. There's no limit on how many points you can earn with your card. And points can be redeemed for statement credit on transactions. So this is going to save you money. They'll save you money with great deals, too, with services and brands like AWS, Google, Salesforce, WeWork. Brex underwrites your company, not you. And as a sole proprietor, I appreciate that. No minimum operating history. Great for startups. No painful paper application. No personal liability required. And it's a Visa card. Brex doesn't require a credit score, a social security number, a security deposit. Employees get instant access to online virtual credit cards. Physical credit cards come quickly in the mail. I mean, really quickly. Every employee can have a corporate card because you control it. You have real-time limits that you can adjust at any time. The expense management is built in. That's the other thing. This is, again, why this is built for business. It's not a consumer credit card. It's a credit card for business. When I first used my Brex card, it was the greatest experience. I used it for a meal. It said, I got a text right away. Like the second I used the card. Okay, take a picture of the receipt when you get it back. It was before the server actually came back with it. Take a picture of the receipt. I took a picture. It categorized it. It said, is this receipt goes to this, right? I said, yeah. They said, good, we got it all, and it's already in your QuickBooks. What? You get complete statement descriptions clearly telling you what you've spent money on. Throw out the receipt because you've got it already in your accounting, not just QuickBooks, all the major accounting software. Join the thousands of startups and tech companies who use Brex right now to manage their growing business needs and earn valuable rewards while doing so. B-R-E-X, Brex, B-R-E-X. You get the card free, and because you're listening, you get the card with no fees in perpetuity forever. But you have to go to brex.com/twit to get this special deal. Brex, brex.com/twit. Cards free and there are no fees forever. But you have to go to brex.com/twit. We really love Brex. Matthew Ingram is here from the Columbia Journalism Review. He's chief digital writer there, cjr.org. Jeff Jarvis from the the whole town night thing. I'm a ding a ding a ding 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 ding.
Yeah.
Ding a ding a ding. It's City University of New York.
From the Newmark J School. That's all you need to say.
The Newmark J School.
Newmark J School.
That's good.
That's all
I need to say?
That's all you need to say.
A lot easier. Are you excited that Google is basically taking over Manhattan?
Yeah. Google. I, for one, welcome my new neighbors.
Major, according to the Wall Street Journal, yeah. New expansion. Yeah. $1 billion in capital improvements to establish a new campus, Google Hudson Square. Where's Hudson Square? It's
just uptown a bit from where they are now.
Yeah.
This is in addition to the fish yards that they bought or whatever.
No, they own the old Port Authority building and then the Nabisco biscuit works that were next door. Yeah. They own all of that. And the Port Authority building is... I mean, it's a New York City block solid. It's just huge. It's huge. And so they have all of that. They bought the building next door, and they're buying up three buildings north of there. I mean, to call it a campus in New York is kind of silly.
It's too spread out to be a campus. Chelsea Market. That's the one I was thinking.
Yeah. Chelsea Market, yeah. Yeah, that used to be the Nabisco factory.
So they're kind of spread out. They're not in all one spot. They have 7,000 employees.
Same as Mountain View. I mean, yeah, Mountain View.
Right.
We're building 473. Oh, that's 5 miles away.
What is it? Is it easier to attract young, smart people to work in New York City? Is that it?
Yeah, because it's the center of the effing universe.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I'm asking the wrong guy. Let me ask the Canadian.
I think they could probably get some people to go there who might not, you know, want to move to Mountain View for whatever reason.
What was that New Yorker cartoon? It was a cover where they had a picture of a map of the U.S. but it was conceived by a New Yorker. Oh, I wish I could find it. Basically, it was the New York and the rest.
Yeah, you can find it.
Yeah,
look up.
Yeah. Anyway,
New Yorker.
This isn't it. Anyway.
You search New Yorker.
Here it is. Here it is.
View of the world from 9th Avenue.
Yeah, view of the world. Here it is. View of the world from 9th Avenue. There's 9th Avenue, Hudson River, Jersey is a little strip, and then the rest of the country and then the Pacific Ocean. That's your worldview, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You got a problem with that, buddy?
Yeah. That's it.
It's not even New York. It's 9th and 10th Avenue, basically. And the Chelsea Fish Market.
It was just brilliant.
The Nabisco Building.
Well, that's where Google is.
Right.
9th Avenue.
So 9th Avenue.
It is the view from Google.
It actually worked. The view from Google. I'll have to do a new one. Interesting. Somebody pointed this out yesterday. They didn't do what Amazon did, which was basically get information about how every major city in the country is run. And which tax breaks were best before they, you know, they didn't have a beauty talent search before they picked their, they said, well, we're just going to do Manhattan. Apple's doing Austin. Apple's building a new Austin campus.
Big, right?
Big one, yeah. Why do companies make a big deal about this? Is this to prove that they're not Silicon Valley? They're not
insular? I think so, partly.
Insular?
Yeah, I think so.
But if you were going to do that, you wouldn't be in New York. You'd be in Atlanta or Nashville or Madison. You know, someplace where you could get a sense of the country better or someplace that needs it, like Mississippi. But, of course, what it amounts to is there's a huge amount of talent in New York. It is the childhood dream of conquering Gotham, and they're going to keep competing against Amazon.
If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. Yeah, that's why it's kind of surprising, though, that they would move. I mean, that's where Amazon's building at least half of its second headquarters is across the bridge in Long Island.
Only in New York would Queens. We complain about that.
It's in Queens.
So everybody's complaining about this.
Are they? See, I told you. You why? Said yeah. it's, oh, no, that's all New York. I said, well technically.
Not good enough for us. There's going to be some gentrification. There's some affordable housing that was supposed to be built. It's not going to be built.
Yeah.
There's a strain on the No. 7 subway and a strain on public services. So one of my students in social journalism is doing that as her community, is the people in that neighborhood and that issue. And we were out for the last class. We went out. My colleague, Carrie Brown, took all the students out for drinks. And we're sitting there. And suddenly one of our colleagues looked up and realized the person covering this story on Amazon is named Alexa.
Wow.
So we all had
She has a deep hatred of everything Amazon because of that.
That seems fitting.
There's a whole generation of women named Alexa growing up today who hate with a passion. Hate Amazon.
People ordering them around, asking them questions. Yeah. Just like we used to anyway.
Google has a little bit of a diversity problem. It turns out a vast number of Google employees, almost half, are part-time. Only 50% are full-time employees. 49.95% are TVCs.
TVCs.
What's a TVC? Temporary?
Vendor or contractor.
Oh. Wow.
You know,
Gary's vendor team just completed a big milestone. This is from the Google training document. He wants to reward them with shirts from the Google store. Should he? Gary should not reward them with shirts. Why? Swag bonuses and other gifts are considerable taxable income to the individual, which Alphabet cannot report since we are not the TVC employer. It can also raise ethics and compliance concerns. Finally,
they don't report T-shirts to the IRS.
Finally, we need to respect and adhere to local laws and regulations, and TVC employers may have strict policies about receiving gifts.
I was going to make fun of this until then. That's if you don't get swag at least on working at Google, what the heck is point?
Wait, Gary said. How can we show appreciation for TVCs?
Write
a thank you note. Send them a note on Google Plus.
Which doesn't exist anymore.
A sincere thank you from all of us at Google.
Perform an interpretive dance.
The Festivus poll.
Oh, yeah. This is a grievance.
You cannot give half of your employees. But this is actually, this was not the first time we've heard this, that they are stingy with most of these employees because they're not employees, they're contractors.
You don't get the free candy or anything either.
It's not for you.
Probably can't ride the bikes even.
Wow. Oh, yes, they can ride the bikes.
I was surprised it was 50%.
It's such an red badges versus white badges.
Well, the article from the Guardian. This is not just people in Mountain View at HQ.
No, this is generally the world.
Groceries.
But this is how it is in the world, right? I mean, this, you know, we have full-time employees. You guys are not. You're contractors. But you only do one show a day, or rather a week with us. But we have full-time employees. But we keep saying we really should stop paying these people benefits. We really need some. contractors.
Oh, I'm afraid. I'm afraid Carson's going to start a strike while we're on the show.
Contractors are the best.
This is what happens. I tell you.
What happens?
Well done.
Red badges versus white badges. The Guardian again. Matt was on his way to a quote whole team meeting for a project he was working on when he noticed that one of his coworkers, a test engineer, was still at his desk. Oh, you should come. Matt, a Google software engineer, recalls saying, only to be told the meeting was not actually for the whole team. Temps, vendors, and contractors were not allowed. The guy sits with us, like literally, next to my desk. He's got better knowledge than me about the parts of the project, to be honest. It changes the dynamic a lot. But this is a part of this comes from IRS regulations. If you are going to use contractors, because there was an abuse of this, right, for a long time, companies would, you're a contractor, John, and he'd be doing exactly the same work as a full-time employee, except I don't have to give him benefits. And the IRS said, no, they're not contractors, and you have to pay taxes and benefits. So that's why Google and other companies now make this very clear line.
It also seems like the way they describe it, it also seems like it's partly a security thing. They're not allowed to go to all hands meetings. They're not allowed to go to the Friday meetings where you can ask questions of executives. And I feel like part of that is they don't want leaks.
Right. Wow, half of their staff.
Yeah, that's a lot. I would have thought maybe like a third or less, but half is a lot.
When I want to hire somebody to like just write an article for my center, we basically have to hire them.
Really?
Yeah. And then I end up paying money for benefits they never see.
Oh,
yeah. Because they only work a week.
So for a long time in Silicon Valley, what they would do, Microsoft used to do this because I have friends who worked for them. They would have a company that's not Microsoft. Hire them, pay them. I'm sure that's what Google's doing. And it gives them an arm's length relationship with these people, even though they're coming in, they're working, they're doing the same job.
Like
they're not working for
Blackwater and the Army.
Yeah, it's like Blackwater. Yeah. They're working for somebody else.
Well, remember when the security people did get hired as Google employees? Because there was kind of a movement about 2-3 years ago.
Right. I would say at some point when you're hideously profitable, you probably... This is the other odd argument when you look at companies like Amazon, where they're really making a lot of money. Is it still sensible for them to be so hard on their staff and employees, particularly warehouse employees, Shouldn't
it certainly makes sense with Amazon. I mean, it looks bad on that company. It looks
Walmart
bad
is famous
on Jeff Bezos
for that, right?
You're making more money than any company has ever made, probably in history. But you won't let your, you know, drivers take a bathroom break, and you won't let them sit down for 5 minutes. It just seems inhuman.
Walmart does
obviously
the same
all
thing.
Those jobs are going to go away anyway.
Half of Walmart's workforce part time.
Yeah. One of my favorite features, I don't know if you read it, was about the retired people who live in motorhomes and work in Amazon warehouses, particularly around holidays like Christmas. And they're basically
it's the new migrant labor.
Yeah. And lots of them lost their homes or whatever in the recession, or you know, invested badly, and they're 70 years old, they're living in a van, and Amazon lets them camp in the parking lot, and then they work in the warehouse. Yeah. And it was just a fascinating and kind of horrifying story.
Yeah.
And there's dispensers on the wall of like pain pills and stuff like that, you know, so that you can keep working longer.
Jeez Louise.
You know what? I was looking for the hiring of the security guards, but I happened upon a LinkedIn page, Google employee reviews for security officer. They're in love. It's five stars. Love being at this place, helping people that needed my help. Felt good to see people leave with smiles on their faces. This made my job fun. I had fun.
It's a blessing
to wake up and enjoy working for Google.
We're going to lose Mo. He's going to go to work for Google. Mo, put fingers in your ears. Mo can't work for us because he carries a weapon. And the insurance for us, if we had him as a full-time employee, would be a big issue.
Okay.
Our insurers won't let us employ somebody who carries a gun as part of his job. So he has to work for a security agency, which we then pay.
Right.
So, and there, California has new rules, by the way, about contract employees, because this was a big issue.
Yeah.
Scooter X tells me that these lawsuits against Microsoft in California, temps can work for a finite time. They have to be off for 3 months, then come back. In other words, you can't just continue to work full time.
And I should point out that media companies have been very bad at that. I know. I worked on contracts that were extended and extended until the union basically complained and said, look, you have to either create a job or, you know, get rid of this person.
That's how, like, either it's a job or it's who got transferred from Tech TV to G4 worked. We all worked as contractors.
Oh, that's so sad. This is Karsten, who was at Tech TV when it got bought by Comcast and then moved to L.A., and they adopted the standard Hollywood practice of saying, well, you're not employees, you're contractors.
Let's not forget Uber does that too, right?
I understand it. I mean, it seems sad, but.
They're not going to be going to work in China. So
in pursuit of profit, people. Yeah, I don't know. Let's talk about Facebook. Boy, there's a lot about Facebook.
Why not?
Jeez.
Jeff, do you want to just take the next segment off?
No, I mean, okay, full disclosure is that I raise money for my school from Facebook. I'm independent of Facebook. I received no money personally from Facebook or any of the platforms. But boy, are they messing up. Except, you know, and I've been, I don't know how to write about this, frankly, because where do you start? And the other problem is, though, so today the New York Times said that Facebook had shared data, including private messages, with big company partners, and everyone had a proper fit about it. But then I read Facebook.
Say that again. Including private messages. Including private messages.
Then I read Facebook's response, and I don't know what to make of this. That.
So there's definitely truth on both sides. I mean, the private messages thing, Facebook's argument is it was specifically designed so you could share a song on Spotify through your private messages. So in order to allow Spotify to do that, it had to give Spotify access to your messages.
Right.
That doesn't mean Spotify could read and write messages on Messenger. Like, some of this is, I think, intentional misunderstanding.
As often the case, mainstream media kind of willfully sensationalizes
stories about
technology. I should also, I don't know if you guys noticed, but somebody pointed out that way, way down in the story, it mentions that the New York Times was actually a partner with
that
Facebook.
They were the one of the ones that got this information.
Right. Yeah. And they did it because they had a sort of social story sharing feature that they wanted to implement that they eventually killed. And if there's one thing I think you could argue is bad, a bunch of this stuff was killed and then Facebook just left the APIs open, like just left them sitting there. So the features died, but arguably the access was still available. That's definitely a flaw.
Okay.
But some of the stuff we've read about already, right? Some of it is.
Yeah, and so they made a big deal of it. Right.
In the early days before there were apps, Facebook had to allow phone makers to incorporate Facebook into the phone. And in order to do that, they had to give the phone makers access to APIs. That makes sense. So that one doesn't seem like that big a deal. But the more modern ones where it was giving them access and then not really telling people, I think that's, to some extent, there's a disclosure problem there. It wasn't clear that they were doing that. And their argument is, Spotify should have told you that, or Amazon should have told you that, or the New York Times.
I put the response up in the chat.
Thank you. Yeah.
And they're saying that there was always permission. They said none of it violates the FTC, and they say that this was done mainly between 2010 and 2014. So there were things, as in the early days of Facebook all around, there were things that would never fly today. Never.
But so this is, by the way, important because one of the accusations is they had a consent decree with the FTC.
Right.
And then in doing this, they might have violated that. And Facebook says, to be clear, these did not violate our 2012 sentiment.
But they don't get to decide that, right?
Yeah, FTC will be the judge of that. Yeah,
right, exactly.
So which is it? Is it, it's really ironic that the New York Times is one of these companies.
Yeah. Well, see prior discussion about data.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Advertisers want it. Media companies want it. Facebook and Google are the only ones that are good at doing it. And we in media clamored for the opportunity to get data. And to this day, every meeting I go to, what do media people beg Google and Facebook for? User data.
Yeah.
Every single
meeting. You could argue that, in fact, it's like looking back in time, reading that story. And you look at all the services and all the things that Facebook offered and how adding social elements to everything was great and everybody wanted to do it and no one thought about the exchange of data and, you know, it was just, we can, you know, connect our calendars and our song choices and everything to Facebook. It's super great. And now it's all horrifying. All the things that we sort of...
Right, because things have changed, right, Matthew?
Time. Yeah,
right,
honestly, right. As Facebook points out, we all signed up for this instant personalization stuff. We wanted our Facebook account to link to Rotten Tomatoes or Yelp or
Bing. And I think Facebook could still have that if they had been smart about how they had informed us.
Disclosed.
We went through the circles of privacy where they keep on changing the privacy setting? That was what this was, process was.
Yeah.
So then now today, you have tons of people who are, including famous people, who were saying, I'm quitting Facebook. So my tweet of the day that got me in a little trouble in some places, I said, I want to quit the platform people are using to brag to the world that they are quitting platforms. Because I'm just getting sick of it, and there's tons of it. But I got into a discussion with Julia Ioffe, who's a journalist I respect greatly, who covers Russia. And she asked on Twitter, she said, I'm tempted to quit, but this is where Russia is being discussed by people. And my advice was journalists need to listen. You need to be there. And everything that I put up on Facebook, I presume to be public. There's no privacy in anything I do on Facebook.
I go back and forth about that. The reason I'm not on Facebook is not because I worry about the privacy implications. It's more a moral stand. I don't want to support the company because I feel like the company's practices are questionable.
And Walt Mossberg said the same thing when he announced that he was quitting.
Yeah.
He said it doesn't fit with his sort of moral principles and code he tries to live by.
And admittedly, it impedes my ability to do my job. I couldn't get the Facebook portal until I reactivated my Facebook account, bought the portal, and then deactivated it. And the portal doesn't fully work without a Facebook account.
Right. And I argued to Julia on the Twitter discussion and to others that we in journalism need more ways to listen to people, not fewer. And so it cuts you off, not from the company, but from the people who were there.
But I do wonder, and I've been thinking about this a bit, the more people quit. So Tim Wu said that he was quitting. Walt Mossberg said he was quitting. And I get your point. And I know Mandy Jenkins made the same point in an essay that we have to be in these places. But I still feel like journalists, particularly not just you and I being on it, but journalistic organizations, media organizations, being partners with Facebook, integrating themselves with Facebook, I think there is a conflict there.
Because you're looking at it as corporate to corporate. You're not seeing the forest for the trees for the forest.
It is to some extent, though. It is to some extent. You're supporting this entity.
And they're supporting them, our entities.
Yeah. So it's codependent, no question. I'm just wondering.
But it also
whether
is about where the people are, and we serve the public. And that's what matters to me for journalists.
But if the people, and I'm not saying Facebook is this, but if Facebook was a deeply unethical organization, should we still use it just because a bunch of people are there?
Well, you know, I was talking to we had Paris Martineau on Twit last week, and she has to use Gab because her beat on Wired requires that she cover the kinds of things that are going on 4chan and Gab, and so she has to stay there. That doesn't mean an endorsement of it. And then I think that's absolutely an exception.
So that's why I was making an exception or a distinction between me as a person and as a journalist being there.
Well,
and my company integrating.
My company's on Facebook. We have a Twit page on Facebook. We also are on Twitter. I'm not, but
I've got a company I work with that is doing Facebook Watch. They're reaching a tremendously large audience for it. They're getting paid for it. At our graduation on Friday, Jorge Ramos from Univision was on, and he was talking about how, they're on Watch, and he's getting an audience sometimes on Watch that's equivalent to what he gets on TV, and he's serving a public that's there. And so it's that only can happen because Jorge was very early in this, two presidential elections ago, he was online with video and on Facebook, and it was pretty amazing. So he's made a huge following there. So partly it is him, but without the company, it wouldn't be there.
But it's also where the audience he's trying to reach are.
Right.
Bingo.
And it depends on who you are. I mean, Mike.com had lots of other problems, but they spent a bunch of money and built up a big team to create a Facebook Watch
program, and Facebook
said, we don't want it. And boom.
And then Mike is out of business. Yeah.
Person I respect greatly in this field, who I disagree with all the time, but Siva Varinathan is, I think, the most intellectual critic of Facebook out there. He has a new book out, a few months old, about this. Mm-hmm. But he argued in the New York Times and argues strenuously that don't quit Facebook, fix it. It's almost like a political structure that if you walk away, that's a position of privilege because you kind of can. But if you're in,
how can I fix
Facebook? You can't fix it. Mark Zuckerberg controls it.
We interviewed Siva about his book, Anti-Social Media, How Facebook Disconnects Us and Undermines Democracy. Now, at that time when we interviewed him, which was in June, I think he was saying get off Facebook. So he might have changed his...
No, he wrote a piece in March that he linked to today.
Okay.
Saying don't get off.
Okay. I misunderstood him.
I mean, you and I can complain about Facebook.
And this is Siva. Siva's highly critical.
Till we're blue in the face, they're not going to change because we say we don't like it.
Matthew, we went through a whole list of features that aren't being done anymore because of public pressure.
I just can't do it. It's not even, this whole discussion doesn't hit me because I can't bring myself to be there. I feel it's unsavory.
What is it? What is it about it that bothers you?
It's unsavory. I feel like it's almost participating in a criminal organization. I'm not going to try to fix it from within. I don't think I can. I think you're right. It's Mark's place. I just don't want to participate.
I would miss the people there, including Matthew Ingram.
I don't miss anybody there. And by the way, every time I deactivate, they put pictures of you and Matthew and others saying, oh, Jeff is going to be really sad. What are you going to say to him?
I do miss you, Leo.
I do.
I didn't realize this, but apparently it's sending to each and every one of my friends, Leo's no longer your friend every time I deactivate. And that's a nasty thing to do.
I wasn't going to say anything.
It's not personal.
I do feel as though, in the early days, Facebook was this wonderful thing and Mark was this bright, shining, creative individual who came up with this great idea. And you know, we've really seen it move to the complete opposite end of the spectrum, where people, even people who aren't in media, aren't in technology, have said to me the same thing you said, Leo, that they feel, and maybe it's because of the reporting, I don't know, but they feel icky using it. They feel they're being used and they're being tracked. And they feel like they're complicit in some sense in this creepy enterprise. Yeah.
I'm going to repeat again. This is a privileged view for those of us, you know, when newsrooms look like the three of us. And if you're a woman in America, if you're African American in America, if you're Latino in America, or media don't cover you, you have no voice, you have no way to speak. These platforms, both Facebook and Twitter, as well as Instagram and others, give you a mechanism to speak that enabled Living Wild Black,
If I were a woman, I would not be on Twitter. Matthew wrote the story every 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's true.
A female journalist or politician every 30 seconds is harassed on Twitter. Yeah. I'm harassed on Twitter at the minute. I mean, there's no point in me being on Twitter. It's just a
depressing survey.
And it's not just women either, by the way, or politicians. There's general harassment all the time.
And women of color, I think we're 85% more likely to be harassed. Mm-hmm.
So if you want a voice, start a podcast, write a blog, do something. But I think Twitter and Facebook are not.
There is an alternate universe, and I know this is crazy to even talk about, but there is an alternate universe, I think, where blogs became a social network, where all the interlinking that we started doing in really crude ways.
So lovely.
Was where that sort of became Twitter and Facebook. Like both of those things could have been incorporated.
Kevin Marks still lives in that.
I know. Could have been an open system, could have been federated.
Dave Weiner begs us to live in that world.
Yeah, where Twitter could have been a sort of open API, and yet here we are.
So I've been rereading the writings of the guy who brought the Gutenberg parenthesis to my mind, Tom Pettit, an academic in Denmark. And he argues, as you know, don't worry, I'm not going to do it all, that we're reverting back to a pre-Gutenberg era, and that was an oral-based world rather than a textual-based world. And what he argues in that was a performance-based world. And what we see happening to a great extent is people are not, we in media think they're creating content. They're not. They're performing.
Yeah.
And they're performing in ways that shock us because that's part of the point. And they're performing in ways that test borders. And they're performing in ways that don't have norms yet. We're returning to a society built on orality over textuality, over text. And I think it's a kind of a brilliant insight into. So we're misinterpreting what people are doing. They're not creating. You know, when we look at what they're doing as if creating content, we say, "Well, this is crap. How could we allow this?" But if we say it's people who are performing and acting out something, that's what our politics are entirely right now. And we've got to judge it against that to figure out what they have to do about it.
That is a great point. And I know I've talked to Hossein Darakhshan, who's a Iranian blogger, spent 6 years in prison for blogging.
Because of it,
When he got out, he noticed that the web had changed. And he described very much the same thing. His sort of shorthand is that it's becoming like television. Everything is becoming like television. So Twitter's becoming like television. Facebook's becoming like television. Television's taken over, and not just in the sense of video, but in the sense of a kind of shallowness in a way of, and so his view, obviously as a person who likes text, is that
and
video
links,
in particular,
what he really likes his links.
Yeah, and links, is that much of this content is just shallow and kind of doesn't encourage you to think. It encourages you to feel and to feel strong emotions. And that's
a condescending way to look at it too, I would argue, is the problem with television was that television was one tube sent out to all of us. And now when you go to my favorite conference, VidCon, what you see is that everyone can make television. And they're not making it in the ways that we would think. And people are going to look down their noses at it. The production values of this are awful. What is that junk? Yeah. Right, you have awful people like PewDiePie coming in saying awful things. Maybe he's not an awful person, but he says awful things.
It doesn't matter. There's no distinction.
And yeah. Right.
If you say awful things, you're an awful person. I don't care.
And so good. Send the tweets to Leo, please.
Good point.
Send the tweets to all the tweets point. To me because I'm not on Twitter, so you can't.
That's why I'm saying that.
But I mean, clearly he's an awful person. I don't.
Yeah.
So
I don't understand why YouTube. Well, I do understand. It's money, right? But it's money, sad. Yeah.
The money works two ways. It's not just the money of, oh, there's ads on this. It's also the money of the cost of having to manage all of that. And so we're still in this transition.
What, manage getting rid of him or manage keeping him?
Manage to get rid of him. Manage to figure out who to get rid of. The million little people.
Oh, I know. I mean, I'm surprised they got rid of Alex Jones. I mean, I honestly don't. They probably wish they could just let everything be and not have to be editorializing at any point because it's very difficult.
Yeah. I do think
it also came out of a certain bloggish optimism.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
They didn't recognize how they're being manipulated.
Yeah.
The sort of Gutenberg, you know, parenthesis idea, I started thinking about specifically with relationship to Twitter. Twitter is much more a verbal, sort of oral kind of performance, if you will, than it is text. It feels like text because you're typing
on YouTube,
but it's not actually like text
at
all.
And that's what some have said is the problem with Twitter is it you feel like you're doing these off the cuff, you know, water cooler remarks, but they're preserved forever.
Exactly. It's in the worst possible kind of gray area between text and performance.
If it weren't for that, we wouldn't know that Jack Dorsey sent beard shavings to Azalea Banks to make an amulet to protect him from ISIS.
Someone has got to like fact check that story.
No, there's a tweet.
It feels too good.
There's
I know.
A tweet.
It feels too good.
Yeah. She tweeted.
Especially because I don't think he ever shaved his beard, you know, so.
Well, you can just take little clippings.
It.
You don't
he
need much.
It.
The question is, did he ever get the amulet?
Apparently he did not. According to the story, he did not.
This is
so he's not protected.
New Music Express. Yeah. Nick, actually, it's from Nick Bilton, right? Nick,
yeah.
Nick referred to it in his Vanity Fair piece on Jack Dorsey. Nick's been doing great work covering Twitter. See, Nick can't quit Twitter, but I can. Let's take a little break, and how about a change log in just a minute?
A change log,
some refreshing. Wait a minute, what's this? Brits tell New York Times to sod off.
Oh, did you see this?
That was brilliant.
It is. So actually,
so good.
The story is here. You should go to the original New York Times tweet, which it'll have in there.
Okay.
The New York Times asked people, have you ever experienced petty crime in London? Click to tell us your story. So if you click on that tweet and
it's
just start
terrible.
Reading.
This
random,
is an example, though. This is just what you said. They should be reaching out to the people and seeing what the
so
people
good.
Say.
The replies
the people
are so
had
hilarious.
Plenty to say. People, the people found a million ways to say sawed off New York Times.
The replies
sitting
are,
on the London Underground, a passenger met my eyes for more than a second. Then he smiled.
Yeah.
Some fella was standing on the left-hand side of the down escalators at Shepherd's Bush today. I tutted very loudly as I passed.
It's hilarious.
It is the best.
A charlatan didn't have his Oyster card ready this morning before getting to the front of the underground queue. Audible tutting ensued. While visiting an acquaintance who lives in Shepherd's Bush, she offered to make me a cup of tea. I said yes, and she put the milk in first. My neighbors left their bins out for 2 days after they were emptied. The horror. The horror. All right. That's pretty funny.
It's
really
nothing
good.
But that. It's thousands of them.
Yeah.
And thousands. It's just.
This is the second time the Times has done this to London. Remember, they did a thing on how, food in London's not so bad anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The mutton. Oh. Everybody made comments about the mutton.
Where is my mutton? I haven't had a Scottish egg in a month.
You see, and so
they
you
did
think
it on purpose.
That life was wonderful
they
with the gatekeepers.
They're trolling
in
London.
Yeah, I think they were trolling the whole country, basically.
Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. If it's time to get a home loan, it's time to go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, I might add, the number one lender in the country. 9 years in a row, number one in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. 9 years running. I'm sure they'll get it in 2019, too, because people love them. It's things like Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans realized that there needed to be an easier, faster, better way to get a home loan, particularly for people like us, online, right? So Rocket Mortgage created the Power Buying Process. It's a three-step process. Step one, answer a few simple questions. No, you don't have to go to the bank. You don't have to go get a big paper application to fill out. You don't have to fax them any information. Just go onto the website, rocketmortgage.com/twig. You could do it on your phone. Answer a few questions, name, address, phone number, that kind of thing. They'll check your credit, and within a few minutes, most cases like under 10, they will give you pre-qualified approval. That fast. You choose the term, the rate, the down payment, and you're done. Then, within the next 24 hours, and again, in most cases, with no effort on your part, they'll verify income, assets, and credit, and give you verified approval. Verified approval has a letter with it that says, essentially, they're good for it. You have the strength of a cash buyer. No contingencies. Moves you right to the front of the line when you're buying a house. Take it from me. I've bought a lot of houses. I've been beat out by cash buyers many times. Never again. And then the third part is really timely. Interest rates again went up today. The Fed raised interest rates. That means your home loan index rate, whatever it is, will probably go up shortly. That's nervous making. You're out there, you're house hunting, and you don't know. Is the rate going to go up? Is it going to cost us much more over the life of the loan? Not if you have Rocket Mortgage, because Rate Shield approval locks your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. You have up to 3 months to find a home. Your rate, you know what your rate is. It cannot go up. You could take your time. You could find exactly the right house. Actually, if rates go down, your rate will go down. They just can't go up. That's why you want to go right now and lock in the rate before it goes up even more. RocketMortgage.com/twig. There's a reason Quicken Loans is the most loved lender in the country. RocketMortgage.com/twig. They care about their customers. Rate Shield approval is only valid in certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. RocketMortgage.com/twig. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Google. The Google changelog was created by the great Gina Trapani many moons ago. Jeff and I just watched as she did it so masterfully.
She did.
She was good. We miss her. But she
Gina,
was,
Gina, wherefore out though, Gina?
She was on All About Android last night, which broke my heart.
Ooh,
it's like, what about us? I think it's, well, it could be you, Jeff, but I think it also could be. No, she loves you. I think it really is that daytime she's working. She's got a day job now, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But if you love Gina, watch All About Andrea last night.
As we all do.
It was a great episode. They had Brian Burnett came back. Ron was in studio. I mean, it was a really wonderful episode, including Gina Trapani. But in honor of Gina Trapani, we're going to rename this the Gina Trapani Memorial Google Changelog.
The Google Changelog.
Memorial?
No, not memorial.
Memorial?
That's just me. I'm just mad she didn't come join us this week on the show. In reviews we trust, making Google Play ratings and reviews more trustworthy. This blew me away. The Google Play trust and safety teams this year deployed a system combining human intelligence with machine learning to detect and enforce policy violations and ratings and reviews. And as a result, they have clobbered a lot of phony reviews. One week, millions of reviews and ratings detected and removed from the Play Store. Thousands of bad apps identified due to suspicious reviews and rating activities on them.
This is a long time coming. Like, thank God they finally did that.
It's, I guess, a testament to how big the store is, but also how much fraud's going on. Wow. Mm-hmm. They say if you're a developer, don't buy fake or incentivized ratings because you might be bumped. Don't run campaigns in-app or otherwise that say things like, give us 5 stars and we'll give you this in-app item. That's not allowed. That counts as incentivized ratings is prohibited. Read the developer policy to make sure you're not making violations. You used to see this anyway all the time. You know, give us 5 stars mm-hmm. and we'll give you 10% off. That's not right. If you're a user, Don't accept, receive money or goods, even virtual ones, in exchange for reviews or ratings. Do not use profanity to criticize an app or a game unless it's effing horrible. No, I added that part. Don't post gibberish. Okay. Hateful, sexual, nope. Profane, or off-topic reviews. They aren't allowed.
No profanity? What?
If I can't say a good, juicy swear word every once in a while on a review, I don't know what's the point. Helping families develop healthy digital habits with Chromebooks. It's a new app. The Family
Nanny State Knows No Bounds.
They're at it again. The Family Link app helps parents see how they're using their Android devices. Here it is. Help your family create
Android or Chromebook?
Well, I guess they've extended this to Chromebook, so it's both.
I see.
That's
the story.
I guess that's the idea. The Family Link app can run on a Chromebook anyway. Keep an eye on screen time. So this is, we have all of this kind of on, for ourselves anyway, on Android, but now you can do it with your family and your kids. Guide kids to good content. Family Link allows parents to customize links of websites kids can visit and review.
So don't watch YouTube then.
Such as YouTube. I'm sorry, YouTube Kids or Google Play Books. Wouldn't want to leave YouTube out. Manage Google accounts and Chromebooks from anywhere. So that's nice. That's nice. That's the Family Link app. Is it only on the Play Store, but you could use it on your... that's not clear. It's just more Family Link features that for Chromebooks.
Is it just for Chromebooks?
I think you get the Android version and it will work on Chromebooks is my sense from reading this. So we were talking about artificial intelligence.
By the way, on my Chromebook, I can no longer tell what version I have.
What?
They changed the settings. And I don't know how to find out.
It must be somewhere.
Well, there's got to be somewhere. Look at that, I just cannot find it.
I don't have one in front of
me. Down in the right there.
There's no about anymore, huh? Google has created a song composing artificial intelligence engine.
See, like you were saying.
Just like I was saying, Music Transformer. The Transformer sequence mod. Should we listen a little bit? Let me see if I can find some. Example.
It says,
there you go.
It says not half bad. That's not really high praise.
So, okay, here's Music Transformer working with Chopin's Black Key Etude.
It's pretty bad. This is.
That's starting with a real piece of music.
That's not bad.
That's not bad. Wait a minute. Here's the song.
It's better, though.
Without any, just do on its own.
It's not bad.
Should we use this as our new theme?
Subtle. You got to pay the algorithm.
I heard a guy in the practice room down at the local university doing exactly this.
Yeah.
Just kind of playing.
Like. Sounds like someone noodling around on the piano.
Noodling.
That's all we do every week is noodle.
Jeff Jarvis Mashed Potato says, go to About Chrome OS Detailed Build Information.
Thank you.
This actually is not bad.
It's not bad. Yeah.
It's got some weird things in it.
I'm impressed.
The team concedes Music Transformer is far from perfect. It sometimes... This sounds exactly like the music in Westworld.
It does kind of.
This sounds like the Westworld theme. The team concedes Music Transformer is far from perfect. It sometimes produces songs with too much repetition, sparse sections, and odd jumps.
That was a sparse section right there.
Yeah, it was a sparse. This sounds so much like Westworld.
It does.
Do you think the Westworld theme was auto-generated? Yeah.
It could be.
It would be perfect if it were.
It would be.
The Westworld theme is actually a feat that's even harder. A human composing music to sound like a machine composed it.
Wow. That's some next level stuff.
That's right next level, man. So you can do this yourself, I guess. Music Transformer. That's a new feature. I'm just going to keep this going.
That's very bad.
It's very soothing. Google is sending...
Can I have another gin and tonic, please?
Here I am, the piano man.
More often?
Google is sending free socks out to local guides. You know what local guides are. Those are those people. I'm a local guide who help others out.
I'm a local guide.
Yeah, on the maps, right? When people go to
Yeah, it keeps
Ottawa.
Telling me if I could only do 10 more reviews, then I can get socks or something.
I know. It's so annoying.
Yeah.
Is that what you have to do? Do more reviews who get socks?
Yeah.
You do a lot of reviews.
9 to 5 Google says, unclear who qualifies. One user on Reddit is at level 7 as a local guide and notes receiving the socks, with others in that same ballpark did not.
Unfair. I have a weird...
Shocking.
So Google keeps emailing me because I'm a local guide, and it says, your pictures are getting lots of views.
Like millions.
So one photo of a patio of a sandwich place in downtown Toronto has like 600,000 views.
Okay, do you think they're lying? Because I get the same thing.
There is nothing unusual about this patio in any way. There aren't even any human beings on it. Why are so many people looking at this photo? Does it pop up like when you look at a specific region in Toronto? I don't know.
Or
it's
they?
A mystery to me.
Yeah.
There's another one. I did a review of a restaurant in Rome. And, you know, there's a shot of the outside of this restaurant in an alley. And it's like... 370,000 views. I don't understand.
Are you tired of that music, or did it just... The robot gave up. He thought we weren't listening.
Robot got tired.
He said, if you're not gonna pay attention to me, I'm not gonna play.
That's the spark.
Not just background music.
I never get tired of robot music.
I think the rest of the show should have freaking robot music.
Yeah.
Hell, robot talk.
It's just a matter of time, Jeff.
It is.
There's a.
Don't tell them our plans.
There's a new. Anyway, get your free socks. Write more reviews. Take more pictures. If I ever got socks, I would wear them, Google. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you. Unfortunately, you would.
It's going to be easier to share files on your Google Drive with non-Google account holders. That's huge. They're going to use a PIN so that they can identify it.
It's such a pain in the butt to try to share something. You send it to me. Are you sure? Yes, I'm sure. I decided this. Well, then they have to ask permission from me, and then it's a McGill.
Plus, they kind of have to sign up, right? If they're not, if they don't have an account,
You can.
Can you?
Yeah, you can.
You got to go through many hoops, and they have fire in them, and it's a pain.
They ask you for permission, and then you grant it.
Okay. So now it'll be just what they call PIN code sharing. You can invite non-G Suite users to call. You can even collaborate. Using a personal identification number. That's kind of sweet.
So this has been overdue, yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Google.
Thank you, Google.
Very handy.
You can ask Google Assistant for flight delay predictions. I like that. Google, of course, because of its acquisition of, what was that? The flight booking
service. Flight thing,
Now, it probably knows more about what flights are going to be delayed and what, you know, historical information like that than anybody. And they're exposing that to you. You can even ask the assistant. You can say, what's the status of flight AA-528? That flight is scheduled to depart on time at 11 p.m. Philadelphia time. Due to delayed incoming flight, there's a good chance it'll... Good change, it says here. This is somebody... Google doesn't make typos like that, do they? There's a good change. So I think this is fake. That'll be delayed by at least 30 minutes. You should still plan to be on time, though. Good change.
It's always going to say that.
Yeah, it's fake.
That's okay.
Well, what I do is I go to FlightAware.
Gotcha.
I go to FlightAware all the time. I mean, I'm neurotic as hell, of course, and I travel a lot. I have 230,000 miles this year. So I go and on United, you can check where the plane's coming from. I'm obsessed with that because I want to know where the equipment is. And then... especially if it's other airlines, I go to FlightAware and I just see how often the plane's been delayed. So I'm doing that judgment.
It's really good, though. It's really good. This is actually really the whole changelog could have been the things Google is doing for the holidays. Draw a line in the snow using tech with kids around the holidays. Live from the North Pole, what's new at Santa's Village? Keep calm and Google Fit on. 7 ways the assistant can help you survive the holidays. These are all blog posts. How Android can help you switch off and enjoy the holidays. On the 12th day of holiday shopping made by Google, gave to me. Unwrap the seasons. On and on and on. This year in Search 2018. I think we already did that one, right? Have you seen this one? So.
That was going to be my show end thing.
All right, I'll save it.
Oh,
I won't mention it.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well,
and then I added something else under that, Matthew, that's related. So no, we can do it at the end. But there's two things we can look at the end.
Okay, you remember? So by the way, this is a little side note. You remember the? I didn't even show it because everybody and their brother sent me a clip of the NASA engineer Mark Rober who made the glitter bomb,
the stink bomb
for package thieves.
Brilliant.
I don't know how many millions of views this video has gotten now on YouTube, and I'm not going to show it because everybody's seen it. But if you didn't watch it carefully, you missed the part where he said the thieves should have known that this was a fake. It would look like a Google HomePod. They should have known for several reasons. One, UPS doesn't deliver Google HomePods. But two, the label was addressed to one Kevin McAllister, who happens to be the kid left alone in Home Alone. Are we getting some sort of Home Alone resurgence here?
Maybe.
Here's a Google Assistant video featuring Macaulay Culkin, who has grown, who has aged slightly, as an updated Kevin McAllister in Home Alone. It's the same house, by the way, at least from the outside.
Mom?
Well, he really looks like the same kid.
Does. Hey, Google, what's on my calendar today?
You have one event called House to Yourself.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Google, add aftershave to my shopping list. Hey, Google, remind me to clean these sheets later.
Okay, I'll remind you.
You bet AC.
Someone's at the front door.
What do I owe you?
Looks like you paid online.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Okay, cool.
Hey, Google, turn down the temperature 2 degrees. Hey, Google, begin Operation Kevin.
Operation Kevin underway.
I guess he's using the assistant to Kevin Durant.
Better get out of here before somebody sees us.
Oh, they even have the voice of what's his name? That's cute. That's a good ad.
It's well done.
And then to which Jeff, ever the Grinch...
Yeah, it is grinchy, isn't it?
Adds a metal floss
party pooper
article. If you did the actual Home Alone pranks, you'd probably kill somebody.
You'd be in prison now.
Yeah, the paint can pendulum with it would hit a 13-pound can of paint would fly towards your face at 20 miles an hour. Vsauce, of course, a YouTube channel, tested the impact this would have on the head of a ballistic dummy. It would pretty much crush your skull.
And there's video.
Yeah.
You want to see the video?
Oh, sure.
Vsauce and Lowe's. Wow. Can you survive the Home Alone trap?
Vsauce, I'm Jake and my parents
have left me home.
Yeah, I can't. Alone. At least he didn't say, hey, guys.
Which is scary because I'm only
Vsauce
8 years
is a pretty
old.
Good channel. I like the Vsauce channel.
Yeah,
and that's a great idea for a video, so...
I want to save time for my favorite video of the week when we get out of the changelog.
The Google YouTube Rewind?
No.
Yeah,
I may be the only person in the world who liked it.
Did we watch that? We watched that last week.
We did watch that last week, yes.
Okay. We don't need to do that again then.
No.
Finally, test your knowledge of the year's top trends with Game of the Year, a quiz based on the most popular searches of 2018. You ready? Let's go. You can play along at home.
How well do you know what trended in search this year? Let's find out.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is going to be some sort of British thing. I should have seen the...
Which boho chic DIY craft trended higher in 2018, filling our homes with lovely hanging plants?
Either macrame or decoupage.
Macrame.
That's right.
Crafty
the answer
Matthew.
Is macrame. I deck out my
macrame. I'm a macrame user.
Macrame.
Okay, I do macrame.
Which one got more love in search this year? Dog backpacks or cat backpacks?
Dog backpacks or cat dog. Backpacks? Dog?
Dog.
Dog.
That's right.
Always dog.
The answer is dog backpacks. Wouldn't it be kind of rough for a dog to carry a backpack?
Where'd this voice come from?
Who was searched more this year, Elon Musk or Iron Man?
Iron Man, Elon Musk. Gotta be Elon, right?
That's right.
Oh, we're good.
We're killing this game.
The answer is Elon Musk. I mean, he did launch a car into outer space.
Why is the voice so bad? This mustn't be from Google.
Which version of IHOP was searched more in 2018?
It is with Google.com. Which version of IHOP was searched more in 2018? IHOP
burger one.
Or IHOP? I think that's IHOP. Oh, it was IHOP.
Damn. Oh, I messed up. The only thing I answered, I got it wrong. I'm sorry. I ruined it.
We had a perfect score, Jeff.
Until I came along.
Lunar eclipse or total eclipse of the heart? Which was searched more? Got to be lunar eclipse. Total eclipse of the heart. All right. Anyway, you get the idea.
You reached the bonus round.
Oh, well, maybe we should Did it trend more in 28? Oh, okay. Drag right if it trended this year. Drag left if it trended less. Okay. Pokemon Go. Did it trend more this year or less?
Less.
More. More. Less. Oh, that was just the setup. Okay. Matcha trended less. Bell bottoms trended less. Electric scooter trended more. Llama. Llama. Less. Up. Single.
That was wrong.
I ran out of time, I guess.
What kind of grooves were we in?
Okay, that's enough. Select Thank you very time much. Time. And that's the Google change log.
Bum, 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 bum.
And that's the Rocket Mortgage Lower
Rocket
Third.
Mortgage.
I love throwing Karsten. He's going like this. Push a button, any button.
All right, can we watch my favorite video of the week?
Yes.
The third from the last under other, okay. Fourth, woman tries to fill.
You this has to up. Be fake. I saw You're this kidding. Video. As You're a kidding. Tesla owner, I'm watching this.
I don't know.
She's trying to fill a car up with gasoline.
The sound up helps.
It's a Tesla. We're watching from the car behind her. Clearly, the people videoing this know that she's not going to find a gas tank. She can't figure out where it is. You don't think this is fake?
Probably. I assume everything is fake.
If it's fake, okay, maybe it's fake.
If it's funny, I assume it's fake.
First of all, really? Would you go? I mean, there's no gas meter. Why would you even stop?
Well, I was talking to somebody, and they said, and I haven't driven a Tesla, so you know better what it looks like, but is there an empty sign?
No.
No.
For your electric?
Is that an S?
Yeah, it's a Model S.
Yeah. No, there's nothing that would even show you.
She wouldn't.
She's going to do it, man.
Now she's given up. She's figured, well, I figured out where the port is. She's opened the charging port, and she's put money in the pump. Oh, dear. Don't put gas in the charging port. She's trying to get the. This actually could be dangerous. I don't know what happened if you put gas in there, but it wouldn't be good.
You couldn't, though, could you?
You know what? I think this might be real because nobody could laugh like that.
I know.
It's fake, right? Even the Google
AI
could.
I was starting
couldn't.
To cry by now. It has a happy ending.
She's giving up now. She's putting it back in the holster. She just doesn't. She's just baffled by it. She's looking in as if that will help.
Of course, this wouldn't happen in New Jersey because we don't have self-service.
But. Right. Oh, you know, that's right. Mine,
that's
I can't
right. Oh, that's right. Well. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Oh, now she's opening the trunk. Sure. Maybe it's in the trunk. Okay. No, she's decided that's not it.
She's not a Tesla driver because she doesn't know you hit a button.
Yeah, she doesn't understand. Okay. I think these people are cruel. I would have gotten out and said, I'm sorry,
wait a
lady.
Second. Wait a second. It's an electric. Second. Your faith in mankind will be restored momentarily.
Someone comes out.
She's calling her boyfriend saying,
What are the lappers?
How do I put gas in this? Oh, she got out.
See, there he comes.
Oh, sweetheart, it's electric. You don't put gas in it. It's electric. Electric car. No gas. She could have thought it was a hybrid, right?
Yeah.
Oh, now she's laughing.
Now she laughs at herself.
She's going, okay, oh, my God, I can't believe it. Oh, okay. Okay.
And, she must have borrowed it or something.
Yeah.
Or stolen it. He's being nice. He's not rubbing it in.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's genuine. All right.
I love it. She waves goodbye to him.
It's nice.
It does seem kind of real. Based on the laughing, those guys are pretty high, though, right? Am I right?
That would explain a lot, actually. Yeah. Let's take a little break. And I didn't get to all the stories today, but there's a lot more. But I'll tell you what I'll do. I will let Matthew Ingram, digital journalist for the Columbia Journalism Review. He's the chief digital writer. And Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at the City University of New York Graduate School, the Craig Newmark School of Journalism. I will let you guys pick some more stories when we come back. Our show today brought to you by Grammarly. I hope you tell your students about Grammarly. I was a snob. I said, my grammar is perfect.
You?
Yeah.
You?
Me, of all people. I am very happy to say I love Grammarly. And it isn't really just grammar checking. Yes, the free product will review your critical spelling and grammar, but Grammarly Premium goes so much farther. Spelling, grammar, and advanced punctuation, structure, you know, how the structure of what you're writing, it actually understands what you're writing. So it could tell you about the style within the context, the vocabulary suggestions. It can rate you for conciseness and readability. And by the way, readability depends what you're writing. So a business proposal has a different goal than an academic essay, has a different goal than a casual blog post, and so on. Grammarly is so awesome. It's really a communication tool that helps you improve your writing so you'll be not only mistake-free, but clear and effective, but maybe even more important. Improves your writing for every occasion with Grammarly. We use it here all the time. It actually is great with Lisa because sometimes Lisa, she's in a hurry. She writes short notes and sometimes it'll say, you know, soften that up a little bit. You might want to say, oh, please, could you, or how are you doing? It will actually tell her that, which is awesome. And she appreciates it. Use Grammarly to double check your important papers and documents. Track your writing skills and progress over time with Grammarly Premium. You get an email every week. Tells you about your word choices. And it's always nice. Like, you used more words than 81% of other Grammarly users. Personalize your experience. Change your settings to write for different occasions. It can even remember new words. Grammarly is so cool. And I want you to try it right now. Go to Grammarly, Grammarly, two A's in Grammarly. Grammarly.com/twig and get 20% off your premium account today. Grammarly, your writing at its best. Grammarly.com/twig. It can really understand what you're writing and help you be a more effective, a better writer. Grammarly. We love it. All right, I got one for you. Did you see, and I wish I could see this movie. You probably could see it in New York. Peter Jackson's World War One movie, They Shall Not Grow Old.
This is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so Jackson, amazing. The creator of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, took really cruddy old newsreel footage, which is hand cranked, and so it's stuttery. You know, you've seen all these old movies. You've seen them.
Super jerky,
black and white. He colorized it. He's spaced out this. You know, he cleaned up the timing so that it looks like an actual film. And he did it not for a little bit, but for 100 hours of archival footage.
Amazing.
He actually ran out of money. The documentary screens nationwide. It's already shown once December 17th, and it's coming up December 27th. If I were in New York City or Toronto, I'm sure maybe Toronto, I would go see this if I could figure out where. Maybe it's only in Britain. I don't know. It is a 90-minute documentary, but it features so many of these videos. And really, isn't it interesting how it seems so much more real?
Changes your perception completely. Yeah.
It's incredible. The Imperial War Museum had a project that commissioned artists to create work for the centennial of World War One. You know, we're 100 years after the end of the war, 1918 to 2018. They approached Jackson. he apparently is a real, you know, historian, World War buff. His grandfather was a soldier in the British Army before the war, served in the war during its duration. So he wanted to only no narrator and only use archival footage, which meant he had to really go through a lot of footage. It took them 3 years to clean this up. But, boy, and we only could see little clips in this New York Times article, but, boy, it really looks good. Can't wait to see it. I hope I get a chance to do so. I wonder after those 2 days if they're going to put it on Netflix or something. But
wow. I hope so.
Wow. It's just incredible. And he's really... they actually brought in, because some of them, like this one here, there's no audio on it, but they could tell what the guys were saying. So they brought in forensic lip readers who, and then actors to actually overdub it so that they would have voices. And they even brought in actors from the different regions of England so their accents would be appropriate. Really, really cool. So that's my article of the week that we didn't get to. What about you, Matthew?
I was trying to. There were a bunch.
But you don't have to pick just one. What's your favorite?
So this is in the rundown. But this guy sort of hacked the New York City Wi-Fi monoliths. So that they would play the Mr. Softy jingle.
It was only a matter of time. these things are great. I mean, they're very high speed internet. You have to be close to it. Are they just where phone booths used to be, or?
Yes. Well, yeah, pretty much. Yes. But they have Wi-Fi, they have a screen, and they have a big ad screen on them. And what you see is you see homeless people charging their phones.
Yeah.
Sitting there for as long as it takes to charge the phone. And it's their lifeline. You can actually make phone calls from it, which is a little awkward because you're kind of screaming in the streets of New York, but it's a connection for people who don't have connections.
I wish that this guy had, when I first read the headline, I was hoping that he had kind of hacked into the Wi-Fi or into the system of the phone or the unit, but he actually goes up to it and makes a freak. So you can make free calls, I guess. And he calls a conference call line that he set up. That then plays the Mr. Softy jingle.
Oh. So it's not really a hack.
So not really that high tech.
So I had, when they announced this, I thought, oh, this is going to end poorly. But it's not. It's Jeff, it's something, it's a success, you think?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
It also said, my favorite part of the piece, I think, was that it said that most of the New Yorkers that the reporter watched kind of turned to acknowledge the jingle and then carried on as though nothing was abnormal.
It's New York.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the big deal? It's Booth is playing the Mr. Softy jingle.
Obviously,
what a surprise.
It's Mr. Softy
friend of mine has been putting up pictures of some guy who's dressed as a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And pictures on the subway and no one's paying the slightest
attention. Of course not.
Yeah. No, nobody even notices.
That's what I love about New York.
Yeah.
You see everything. You see everything.
You got a
there.
Problem with that?
Everybody's got, there's personal space.
Yeah.
I think that's fun.
Yeah.
And I have to disagree with Gizmodo. Mr. Softy is not creepy music.
When you slow it down, it's creepy.
It's a little creepy.
If you play it in a minor key, maybe.
Yeah.
Bye-bye, Oath, we hardly knew ye. Verizon has decided, remember they bought Yahoo and AOL?
And last week they reduced the value of the brand by $4.6 billion.
Yeah, $4.6 billion,
And now they're going to rename it to something a little more sensible than Oath, Verizon Media Group.
That was roughly half the value of
that's the purchase.
That unit.
They've basically
50% of that entire unit.
I thought it was 4.8, Matthew. It was 4.8 down to 4.6, minus 4.6.
No, I think so. 4.8 was what they paid for... Yeah,
that was the brand value.
But the total, so
you're
what
right.
I read was
the purchase price was higher than both, yes.
Yeah.
But they wrote off the total, a good portion of the purchase price.
The goodwill.
The goodwill.
They had no good
brand
left.
Value. Now, I thought, Jeff, you'd want to pick this one. France is going to tax Google, Apple, Facebook, and Amazon, GAFA. European finance ministers did not agree on a block-wide digital tax next year, but France says, yeah, we're going to do it anyway. They want to raise half a billion euros in 2019 off the backs of these guys. This is just business as usual, you know, right?
Yeah, and the problem I always have with this is that it's fine. Your government, you set the tax rate, but don't set it for specific companies. You've got to set it fairly across the playing field. But that's not what they're doing. They're playing politics, but that's what politicians do.
January 1st.
So the story that is, so what do you guys, do you think there'll be a panic about Electric Guard?
No, really? I think that's kind of cool. So you can now tell your Amazon Echoes to listen for glass break or what else?
Screaming.
Smoke alarms. Screaming.
Smoke alarms, right.
No screaming. So as you leave, you say Echo, turn on Echo Guard, and your speakers will listen for trouble. They can't call 911, but if you have a alarm service, it can call the alarm service. And it can also notify, it'll most importantly notify you, and you can listen in. You can even speak, so you can hear, oh, there's somebody in our house. Get out of the house. I'm calling the police now.
And then you hear, meow.
This is not a new feature. There's a number of alarm systems, including our advertiser, who do this.
You know what I bet it's going to happen? People are going to say, see, I know they listen to you all the time. They can do that.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's what people are going to say.
Probably is going to.
The theory here is you turn it on when you're leaving.
You turn it on, but that means it's capable. I bet it's already on
all the time.
They're just fooling us. I know I'm going to hear it. I know it.
Did you know Tesla has a fart mode?
This what?
Bothered me.
What?
Yeah.
All Teslas? My Tesla?
Has added a fart mode.
What does it do?
You can configure it in one of two ways. Fart on demand allows the driver to send flatulence through the speakers with the press of a scroll wheel.
Elon.
Then there's fart on turn signal.
Now that's funny.
There are six different noises. Can be randomized.
The Stern Mobile.
Falcon Heavy is one of the sounds.
Fart on demand.
Wait, what is it
going to
do? It can fart at random. And it has...
Falcon Heavy.
Wow, Elon. Kids love it.
Shorts Ripper.
Okay, yeah, I sure, guess I'll be great. Turning that on.
I'm sorry, officer. I was turning on the fart feature I didn't pay attention and I caused an accident.
Some people might say, Elon, if you could worry less about Atari games and fart mode, you might want to work a little harder on the self-driving capabilities, but not me.
He just opened a tunnel, too.
Yeah, that the was boring today, tube.
Yeah.
So what's your next car going to be, Leo?
You know, I really wanted a Model 3, and I'm worried about the company. And I honor Elon for his vision. He's a visionary. He really made electric vehicles happen. He's also insane. And I don't feel like it's safe to buy another Tesla at this point. My lease runs out in July. I Audi's doing electric vehicles. I think I might look at a more traditional car manufacturer.
You think Tesla's got, there's a risk the company's actually going to go under?
He's so mercurial that people have had a lot of problems with repairs and body work. I do worry that, you know, he might hear me say something and decide he doesn't like me and deactivate my car. It just worries me.
Well, that one time he wouldn't sell one to somebody. I know that.
Yeah.
Because he got upset.
Yeah. And the thing to understand is that Tesla logs everything you do in that car. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if Tesla even logs the audio in the car. Not for ad sales, but just they want records. And particularly what they're anxious for is evidence that it was your fault if the car crashes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the things I noticed when one of a car crashed and burst into flame. And within minutes or maybe hours, Tesla had provided detailed descriptions of every act that driver had taken from touching the door to, touching the steering wheel.
That made me a little nervous.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really, everybody who has a Model 3 loves it. So I don't have to decide till July.
They're great cars.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I love my Model X. I have a Model X. Do you have a Tesla, Matthew?
No, I do not. But a friend has a Model 3, and it's amazing. Love it.
I'm going to do a trade. One of our employees has a Model 3. I'm going to do a trade.
The thing that struck me that I couldn't get used to is that there's no dash panel.
I kind of like that.
So it's just a featureless expanse of wood.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
So where all the dials would be.
That's where you prop your book.
A piece of wood.
So you can read that.
It just looks like, you know, part of the, there's no dials, no gauges, no nothing. It's odd.
You know, actually, I've been thinking a lot about, we were talking earlier on Windows Weekly about user interface in cars, because I drove the Jaguar electric vehicle, the I-Pace. Mm. And it's got buttons and knobs. It's very physical everywhere. And it's too cluttered for me.
Yeah.
I like I don't know if, I mean, Tesla, the Model 3 is extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I kind of like it. I've gotten used to the Tesla way of simple, clean interface.
Yeah, it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
It just takes a bit of getting used to.
Yeah. And then there's a Porsche coming out early next year, the Taycan.
Oh no.
I don't know. Yeah, it's supposed to be. Well, it's the same. It's Audi also. Oh, and then there's a new V-dub that people are going crazy about.
Really? Which one?
Well, it's not out yet, but they've been driving around prototypes. So they're
electric.
Getting,
electric VW.
All electric VW.
Well, there was
the van?
No, that's coming in a couple of years.
Coming back with the van.
That's in 2021, I think.
Okay.
They are saying they'll have 342-mile range, which is huge. It's called the ID, but see, they're driving around these Dazzle. They've got this Dazzle camouflage on them. But it's going to be very, I think, affordably priced.
Hmm.
So I don't know. See, this all goes back, interestingly, to Dieselgate.
Yeah.
Because Audi and VW, which are the same company, of course, they were faking the results for their diesel engines. And as a result, they got a huge fine. And one of the commitments they made is something called Electrify America, multi-billion-dollar investment into charge stations every 40 miles in the United States. So there's going to be these chargers everywhere. It's going to be very interesting. I don't know.
Anyone upset that Chevy got rid of the Volt?
They killed the Volt?
I think so.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Because now they have the Bolt.
Oh. The very poorly named.
Yeah.
Yes. One's electric, one's hybrid. So they got rid of the
Bolt
hybrid.
The hybrid, yeah.
But they kept the electric. No, I think every car company is facing the facts that we're going to have to go all electric in every country of the world, except the United States, where we will continue to drive
coal-powered cars.
Coal-powered cars for the foreseeable future. God bless it. You know, why isn't there a second amendment for gas engines?
I think there will be.
There might be.
I'm picturing a future, and there's like an underground, you know, group of guys who drive their own physical cars and put gas in them, and
they have to make their own gasoline.
Yeah,
only outlaws will have internal combustion engines.
Companies want to get rid of gas.
I think that is actually the attitude among some.
Yeah.
But I like driving an electric vehicle. I feel good about it.
The torque just amazes me.
Oh, it is incredible.
It's
a
great drive. They're fun to
drive. The only one I've ever driven was the torque. BMW.
The i6, whatever. Yeah. So, Jeff, did you have a number, or are we going to wrap this thing up?
I do. So, Chartbeat, which tracks traffic on most sites, put out its list. I think Craig Silverman, Matthew's Lonsman, Canadian from BuzzFeed, said, I think it was Craig, said, if you get depressed about what people are paying attention to, look at this list from Chartbeat. It's the stories that had the most engagement in news in the year. So number one was Bourdain's death, tragically. Number two was I'm part of the resistance inside the Trump administration. Number three, Brexit live blog. BBC. Number four, this is why Uma Thurman is angry. Number five,
why is Uma Thurman? Oh, I remember now why Uma Thurman is angry.
Yeah. I can't remember either. So these stories had high engagement, and there's nothing awful in here. Now, of course, these that's self-fulfilling because it comes from major news sites that pay Chalkbeat. Okay. But those sites also had dumb stories, every single one of them. And those weren't the ones that got the most engagement.
So we're not idiots out here. Engagement means what? Not that these are the most read story. People read the...
Traffic.
People actually... Like the Uma Thurman story, you couldn't stop reading. It was all about how Quentin Tarantino practically killed her when making... was it making Kill Bill or... I can't remember.
Was it Kill Bill?
Right. It was Kill Bill, yeah.
Kill Bill, I think,
yeah, it wasn't exactly a Me Too.
Time spent with the stories.
Yeah, it was a good story. Okay, good.
Time spent.
Good.
So life is
Although
okay.
I did notice BuzzFeed News, not to rain on your parade, Jeff, but BuzzFeed News had a list of its top stories. Well, and not BuzzFeed, BuzzFeed News.
Oh.
And
all right.
Number four was, is this person saying Yanny? Or Laurel.
Oh, I hated Yanny or Laurel. I hated that. I hated it. By the way, what did you hear? Yanny or Laurel?
I can't remember, actually, to be honest. I read, whatever it was, you're wrong. I read a description of how it worked, and then I could hear both.
Yes, so exactly.
It kind of ruined it for me.
Did you have a pick, Matthew? Anything you wanted to tell people about besides Yanny and Laurel?
We stole it from him.
I do not.
We did. We stole his video.
We stole his
video. Yeah, that's
so
right.
It was in a good cause, Matthew. You sacrificed for a good cause.
So Amazon sells a $70 puck that you put your Note or Galaxy phone on. It turns it into a desktop computer. It's an interesting concept, right? The idea that this phone, these phones are powerful enough now. Why do you need a separate computer? Why don't you just carry the phone around and have a little docking puck wherever you go? The problem is it's kind of expensive. So this is my pick, and it's actually pretty cool. It has all the value of a DeX dock, but it's only $30. It doesn't come from Samsung. It comes from NexJack, N-E-X-J-A-C-K. And it actually does turn your phone. This is the Galaxy browser. But if I want, I can launch other Galaxy stuff. I even have a keyboard and a mouse attached to this, and it's got an HDMI port. Actually, I think it's dead. The mouse doesn't seem to be. Oh, there it is. Yeah, no, it's not dead. How do I close this? We could show the desktop. It's our scaler isn't working right. So, but there's a desktop screen you get on it, and there Microsoft Office works as a desktop application, as does Samsung's email, some of their other. Applications, including their internet browser. It kind of looks like a desktop. Here's the deal. I'm not sure. I don't know how useful DeX is, and I don't know if you would want to use it. But for $30, you get a little dongle that, by the way, also charges the device because it's got a Type-C connector. In fact, you have to just plug it in to make it work. It has a full-size HDMI port, two USB ports, one 3.1, one 2.0. So it's a hub. It's a connector hub that also can be used as a DeX station. I think for $30, this is a very sensible thing to add. I wish they had a headphone jack, but I guess you don't really need one because the Samsung still makes phones with headphone jacks. But somebody in the radio show last weekend said, "Should I get a DeX?" And I said, "There's this $30 thing." I said, "Let me get it and tell you." NexJack, N-E-X-J-A-C-K. You can get it on Amazon, $29.90. If you have an S8, S9, or Note 8 or Note 9, I would get one. Why not? Ladies and gentlemen, this is our last show of the year.
2018. So long.
Next week, we're going to give...
It never return.
Thank God.
Was this a terrible year?
Yeah. In a lot of ways, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it was. I don't know. Yeah.
high stress.
I've blanked it out. To be honest.
Well, so was the stock market blanked out anything that it gained.
Oh, my God. That was a bad year for investors.
Yeah.
We will be back January 3rd, or is it 2nd? 2nd. Yeah. With a whole new show. Next week, though, it's the best of this week in Google, featuring bits and pieces from all of the shows of this year. And actually, I think if you watch our best of shows, you can be the judge of whether this was a good year or not. There were some good moments for us. Jeff, have a wonderful holiday.
Will do. You too, boss.
Thank you. I can't wait. We're doing
best to the family.
A couple more shows. I'll be back for the Tech Guy, the new Screensavers, and Twit this weekend, and then it's a week off for our best ofs. We're going to do a fun Twit, though, kind of our holiday Christmas Eve Twit.
Well, did I hear the return of
possibly the Grinch? Will make a. You know why? You know what I did? I set a trap. I bought that Louis XIII cognac, the 100-year-old cognac, for $3,000 right. In the Baccarat bottle. I bought that. And I said, anybody who shows up for Twit can have some.
Dvorak bait.
It was Dvorak bait. I set my trap.
Nice.
And he fell right into it. So, yeah, I'm not sure who else is going to be coming, but it should be a lot of fun. Alex Lindsay, if you've come out, you're on. Oh, no. If you want to fly out for a $100 sip of booze, be my guest. Matthew Ingram's at the Columbia Journalism Review, CJR.org. He's chief digital writer there. He's on Twitter, too, M-A-T-H-E-W-I. Math Ooey. Just remember, if you don't like math, you'll love Math Ooey. How about that?
Okay.
Okay?
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at CUNY and BuzzMachine.com.
At the Newmark Graduate School.
The Newmark School.
Can I ask you, Jeff, though, as a professor, graduate school professor, do you have patches on your tweed jacket's elbows?
No.
Good man. Get your wife to put those on immediately. What good are jackets without patches?
I'm one of those horrible old men who tries to act younger, and I wear hoodies these days.
Oh, no. You know, nice. It's really seemly is wear a beret and drive a sports car. That's what you should be doing. Always a pleasure. I don't know. You may not have liked the year, but I enjoyed this year working with you. And
as long as we're here on Wednesdays, it's a good year.
Yeah, exactly. Stacy, Matthew's been on many times. Thank you, guys. Have a great holiday season.
Thanks for having me.
In 2019. On This Week in Google. Bye-bye.